And in what feels like a blink of an eye, podcasting has become a multi-billion dollar business. Just last week, the New York Times acquired Serial Productions for $35 million. And we're also seeing people such as Michelle Obama launching podcasts of their own. So how did podcasts go from the niche fringes of the internet to this? Siobhan McHugh, Associate Professor of Journalism at the University of Wollongong, an expert on the matter, spoke with me, and I began by asking what were her feelings about the trajectory of this medium and how and the people who are entering it.
Well, I think it's lightening on two levels still. So obviously at the big end of town, you know, it's becoming huge. And we're seeing these amazing money figures being thrown around with the Michelle Obama deal and the Joe Rogan deal and others. So that's, you know, that's showing that there is a corporate agenda going on at one end of podcasting. But I'm not convinced that that threatens the indie end of podcasting at the same time. I mean, there are some problems with it, that, for instance, Spotify is now looking very appealing as a platform for people to distribute their content through, because it offers a kind of one-size-fits-all, one-stop shop where you can make a podcast via Anchor, you can upload it, and they have all the consumers there ready for you. So it's tempting for even the small people to go to Spotify. And the problem there is that once you're on that platform, you're going to start consciously or unconsciously adapting to what they prefer, to the algorithm, sort of algorithmic choices that they are angling for. So that's really where the issue is at. But I think, you know, it's still going to be possible to go out and make a podcast and have a niche audience if that's where you want to be.
When did we start to see podcasting make so much money?
Well, it's still, you know, it's not huge. It's only a few people who are making lots of money. I know quite a lot of people who don't make a lot of money out of podcasts, including me when I make academic stuff. But that's not my motive. I mean, when did we start to see it? Well, it's still quite small compared to other aspects of the internet and compared to the huge, you know, the Netflix and the HBO in web series. But Serial definitely changed everything, and that's now nearly 6 years old. So they've had hundreds of millions of downloads for their series. And I've actually been on a panel with the producer of Serial, Dana Chivas, just shortly, about 6 months after they launched it. And, you know, they were just flabbergasted by the interest, because they were just messing around with an experimental format. They never thought for a minute that it was going to catch on the way it did, which is kind of nice. And they've just sold, of course, to the New York Times for $25 million. But that was definitely a game changer. I mean, as soon as Serial happened, everybody around me who had never taken much interest in audio suddenly started getting interested, and everybody wanted to make the next big Serial. That's in the journalism field. But I think that, yeah, you know, there's still a lot of chat casts and chum casts and, you know, people riffing on hobbyist themes and doing some quite interesting personal storytelling work that will still keep going with or without the big money.
And on that note, going back to these two levels and two sides of podcasting, I mean, as a volunteer community radio station worker, I think I understand, but how are these more independent podcasters going?
Well, what I think is really interesting is that there's a great community solidarity in that space. And I don't know what groups you might be part of, but I kind of dip in and out of Facebook groups and other social media groups, and you see people sharing tech tips and offering to, you know, to do syncs for each other pro bono and to do voiceovers and organizing little workshops. I'm part of a group called Oz Audio Makers. And there's some really helpful cooperative kind of stuff going on there, which is very like the old community radio kind of ethos. And I'm really happy to see that happening. And I think what's interesting is that, you know, it is possible to see podcasting as a serious intersection between an art form and a journalistic form. And that's borne out by the fact that the Australia Council has recently helped fund the podcast Bird's Eye View from the Darwin prison, which was the stories of female prisoners. You know, we think it's a world first. There is another prison podcast called Ear Hustle, which comes from San Quentin in San Francisco. But we think that Bird's Eye View is a first. And that was supported by the Australia Council, which is a serious arts funding body. So 5 years ago, nobody would have funded a podcast in that way. So I think that's good news for the indie sector. And also with Spotify, I mean, there's been a lot of portraying of Spotify as a kind of almost an evil force that's going to take over the world. But you have to give them some credit for the fact that last year they funded a series to encourage First Nations people to come up with new ideas for podcasts. And those ideas are live and out there. One of them is Search Engine Sex. You might have heard of that one. Which is presented by a gay Indigenous man. And, you know, I can't see that getting up really without that help from Spotify. So there are good and bad things going on in the space.
We're speaking with Siobhan McHugh, Associate Professor of Journalism at the University of Wollongong, about the rise of podcasting. And what would you say are the advantage of this medium of podcast compared to other ways of broadcasting?
It's very intimate. I mean, I think we've all agreed on that. I'm an old radio person, so we always knew about intimacy was a very well known secret of radio going way back. But it's kind of ramped up by the fact that people are listening one to one in with the voice of the podcast going right into your ears. I mean, that really does ratchet up the intimacy factor. And we're starting to find studies now, myself and colleagues, we're starting to write about how the host is really seen almost as a companion, a new friend by listeners. And that is kind of different from the shoutier sort of tradition of radio, where, you know, the radio broadcaster had to fill the room or the car or whatever it was. But now the podcast host can almost take for granted that if somebody has pressed play and selected them to listen to, they've got an interest, they've got a relationship ready to go. And so they can just take for granted that there is this bonding going to happen. And I think that is really powerful, because when you were a radio broadcaster, you had to hope that somebody was going to just randomly turn you on and find you. But it's different with podcasting. It's opt-in, and that's very big.
Where do you think the future of radio fits into the media landscape with this continuing growth of podcasting?
Well, I think the liveness of radio is really powerful. The immediacy factor, that is something that podcasting forfeits, if you like, because podcasting goes to the other end of the spectrum. It has longevity. It'll be out there online forever and ever, unless everything crashes. But when you have something like a live event, I mean, I was listening to the news on the Black Lives Matter protest this week in Sydney, and they cross live, and there's the reporter saying, yes, two people have been led away, and as I speak, people are moving down the domain. I mean, that is, there's an energy there that you can't get listening a day later to somebody recalling it. So immediacy and liveness will always be great for radio. And the sense of connectedness that you get when you're listening live, whether you're listening to a late night music program and you're lying there and there's not many people, maybe a lot of people are asleep, there's that magical feeling of being connected via the ether, which old radio fans just love. And it is very special. But I think what's happening is that podcast listeners are forming their own communities online, and they're starting to have these listener-to-listener relationships that were harder to get at in radio. So in radio, the listener might write into the radio show or whatever, but you couldn't really get a para relationship going, listener to listener. Whereas people are starting to cluster around social media groups as listeners. And you see it, for instance, in the big Facebook group that the New York Times Podcast Club has. I mean, they have about 30,000 people now. And people are desperate to kind of talk to each other about a favorite podcast and give recommendations and sometimes vent or whatever it might be. So those relationships are somewhat different. But I think, you know, I love both media. I still love radio.